Welcome to the Internet Advisor. More of the good advice from experts that you expect here on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, 760 AM WJR on Saturday afternoons. My name is Foster Brown. I'm the co-host and producer of the program. And while I can't be here for the full program today, I just had to stop by at the beginning to open the doors here and welcome you in. We've got a great group of people in here. Tech experts like Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and my old buddy Gary Baker, who's been my co-host here for nearly 20 years. Part of our purpose is to help you folks get answers for the questions you have. So here's the phone number you can start calling right now, 800-859-0957. Again, that's 800-859-0WJR. Start punching in those buttons, and in just a moment, we'll be back to start answering your questions and getting some answers for you.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm your co-host, Ed Rudell. In studio with me is Cal Carson and Gary Baker. And we still have the IT and the D guys still on the show with us. And we're going to be talking, just a little bit more with them.
Yeah, why not keep them around? I mean, what the heck?
Well, they're a lot of fun.
They're hometown kids. Yes. I mean, you know. They're like bread mode. Well, you like to have them here. They come up and
surprise. Like kittens, you put a saucer of milk out. We're just going to show up and hang out for a while. That's just how it goes.
There you go. Yeah, and besides that, we have a mutual friend of ours, and that's Mike Brennan on the telephone line with us. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor again this week.
Thanks, Gary. Always a pleasure. Hey, are Bob and Dave drinking beer, by the way?
They're not allowed to. This is a public radio station. so, Mike, we don't talk about stuff like that.
Our reputation precedes us.
So,
I was just mentioning
last hour, which people can listen to via podcast from our site at internetadvisor.net, or they could go to iTunes to download the podcast as well. But we were talking about when you and I visited IT and the D and were on their show. We did a home and home, had them on our show, and we showed up on their show. That was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a different entertainment format they got going there, but it really works. So.
And so you're our editor. You do this every week. Anybody that's listened to the show has heard it many times, and it's always on this time of day on the 5 o'clock hour. And we talk about things that are in mytechnews.com, which is your newsletter. It's all about technology, and you've written not only extensively about some of the IT and the D activities and their new studio and how well they've been doing, but this week you've also talked about a brand new relationship that you have, another partner of ours that's coming on board, which is the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan.
Number 8. I'm growing out the content partners. We now have 8, and they're a very vibrant group. They have almost 3,000 members. That's all the folks involved in mobile and wireless and machine learning and all that, which is really, really big in Michigan right now with the connected car efforts and all the rest.
Yeah, and they're having a big connected car symposium at Suburban Collection on Wednesday and Thursday this week, the 3rd and 4th, right?
They are indeed. It's the old telematics update. That was the name that they used to call what we now call info entertainment these days. So they just changed it to TU Automotive, but they're going to have dozens of vendors there, I know, because they've all reached out to me wanting me to stop by their booth. And I'll do the best I can. But there's lots of really interesting technology, kind of the future of where we're headed with mobile, and mobile, that is the future. So
I got a press pass as well. I won't be able to go on Wednesday because that's our Midwest Technology Leaders Symposium, downtown Detroit. So everything's kind of happening here in the end of May and June, but lots of activities. This is for CIOs and other IT leaders. It is invitation only, but I will be there on Wednesday, and Thursday I'm going to be at the Connected Car Symposium.
Yeah, me too. So we'll have to have a chance to we'll compare notes at the end and see which ones we really like.
Oh, that's code for let's stop and have a drink.
Yeah. That too, yeah. Well, you know, when you get some of that falling down beer, shameless plug. So, no, can't say that, right?
they may or may not stock our studio with delicious beer.
Yeah, that's one of your sponsors, is that it? Oh, I got it.
Okay. Hey, Mike Brennan, if I could ask you a question. What is this story in MI Tech News about a pickle recipe?
Well, that's actually a film board just gave them $500,000. And it's pickles, all local, everything. Some local ad guy came up with a storyline about this pickle recipe that that the spies are trying to steal. And they wrote a screenplay, and he got the production company together. He's going to spend almost $2 million. And then the film board gave him $500,000 towards that. So that we can, this is about as home-baked as you can get, right?
Well, I'll tell you, it must be some really good pickle recipe.
Sure, that's not the Coca-Cola recipe, just changing the pickles out.
But that, you can find that type of information and so much more in mitechnews.com, Mike Brennan's website. They can tell you so much about what's going on, technology-wise and pickle-wise, here in the state of Michigan.
And not only does he do that, and you can sign up for free at mitechnews.com or go to our site and link off to their site, to Mike's site, and sign up. And you get this newsletter that comes emailed to you. And again, it's a partner of ours. You have, like we said, Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, IT in the D.
Michipreneur.
The Digital Divas. Who else? There's quite a
Engineering group. Society of Detroit.
Oh, our big one. That's right.
MI Tech 248, that's the Oakland County group. This goes on, and we're real happy about that. We're going to try to consolidate all this now. I'm going to be bringing in video here shortly that everybody's going to be able to share. More about that later. I'm not quite ready to divulge all the details, but that'll be fun. And I'm looking forward to working with Bob and Dave in their new studio one of these days here and get some stuff produced. So it's all good.
You've heard Mike Brennan from mitechnews.com. He's with us every week here at this time and this part of our show, talking about all things technology. We have the IT and the D folks, Bob Waltenspiel, Nuri Gojai, Dave Phillips. Guys,
you're welcome for having an easy name, by the way.
Thanks. I got the other two kind of close.
That's great. That was perfect.
And thank you guys for hanging in here, and it's been fun this last hour.
Absolutely.
And when we come back, we'll be taking your calls, our listeners, at 1-800-859-0957. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ed Riddell, and this second hour is for you. We'll be answering our listener questions at 800-859-0957. But we also have the added benefit of having the IT and the D crew in here with a host of additional experiences. And Bob, one of the things that you were mentioning is the transition that sometimes older workers have to go through, and transitioning from one type of work experience, and then jumping into another.
Well, there's a couple
switching gears.
Yeah, there's a couple that we've been a guest speaker at Michigan Shifting Gears program for probably the last 8 years.
Yeah.
Basically, people in career transition, but there's two different types. There's one that's the guy that's been the old mainframe COBOL guy that's transitioning into maybe a more modern technology, but then you also have people that are completely out of the industry that want to break into it.
Right.
So we see a lot of different career transitions from a lot of people from all ages,
Right. So this second hour, we can not only take questions about your computers and having difficulties getting on the internet or printing, but also, from your happy hour that you guys talk.
Basically, what you're saying is that if I either need something fixed technology-wise, or if I want to get from being a butcher to a blogger, I can call.
Sure, why not?
My father was a butcher.
Well, as some people say, when I work at computers, I'm a butcher too. So.
With that, let's go out to Angela from Clinton Township. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, bottom line for me is my printer is not working. I have my printer hardwired to my computer. I've got a Dell Windows 8, and the printer just stopped working. And the item that I want to print keeps showing up in the print queue, and I can't delete it out of there.
Would you happen to have like an HP printer?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And this is something I noticed now. Is your printer hooked up wirelessly? Because the newest HP printers that you purchase now, the software that they give you to configure it is that you have to download it, basically. They don't even provide you a CD anymore. Windows 8 discovers it, and then you download the software. Sometimes you can hardwire into it, but they prevent you from actually statically defining static IP addresses. You cannot do a static IP address in modern HP printers anymore that are meant for the home environment. So have you just tried to reinstall the printer from scratch, as an example? You know, like as if it's just out of the box.
No, we haven't done that yet. That was our next thing.
Now, Nira, you might have a thought.
So is it connecting using a USB cable, like how you plug in your camera, or is it connecting with a serial cable, which is a much larger connector?
The serial one.
So a serial connection. Interesting.
So how old is the printer?
Well, USB is serial.
Universal serial bus.
Oh, okay. That's true. Okay, so I'm sorry. Did you ask how old the printer is?
Yes, about 5 years.
Oh, okay.
And did this just stop working one day, or did something happen to make it stop working?
Yeah, it stopped working, and then it did it before, and then I was messing around, trying different things, and then I got it to work. Problem is, I tried so many different things, I forgot what I did that actually made it work.
Yeah, I do that too.
So, and then when it happened again, I forgot, so I don't know what I did.
Now, one of the things I know that with Windows 8, it can be even difficult just to find your device in printers. So what I have to do is I have to go to the classic desktop, right mouse click on the start circle. It's really not a start button anymore. And I have to select search. And when I do that, I select devices and printers. That will bring up the classic Windows 7 interface, which allows you to, you know, then manipulate your printers. What I would recommend is for you to go in and delete all your the printer definitions for this 5-year-old printer, and then go through the process of reinstalling the printer from scratch. Cal, what do you think? Because you deal with a lot of people at home on their computers. I mean, I'm pretty much stuck either working on my home, my personal one, or work.
I think probably the first thing that I would do is I would delete whatever prints I had in a particular print queue at the time. If you have a USB cable attached to that printer, I disconnect it from both ends, the printer and the computer itself. Turn the printer off, turn the computer off, turn the printer off. Then turn the computer back on. Once it comes up, turn the printer on, and then plug the cable into the printer and then into the computer.
And then at that point, the Windows operating system will probably go through an auto-discovery sequence.
Correct.
It may, and then there's also support.hp.com to download the newest driver for that. So maybe, you know, if you came from an older, or maybe even the Windows driver is older, but if you go to the HP website, you'll download the newest one.
Yeah. How does that sound? Does that sound like that's something you can do? Delete the printers, disconnect the cables, shut down, restart?
Yep. Sounds good.
Oh, okay. You know, give us a call, or if you have a question out there, you can always call 800-859-0957, and I'd like you to let us know how this works out, if this process works for you. And you can always go to our internetadvisor.net website as well, and you can select the Contact Us and let us know how that happens, or call us back next week at the same time. I'd like to know what happens.
Thank you.
Okay.
It was a little bit hard to hear her because of the mobile connection. But, you know, we haven't talked about the tool set that we have up in on our site at internetadvisor.net. Ed, you put a lot of information up there that people can go to 24/7, right?
Yep. What happened? It's called the Toolkit. And we found that a number of our listeners were asking a lot of the same questions, and we were referencing a lot of the same utilities. We were referencing anti-spyware, anti-malware software. We were so we put a link for that, free antivirus software, free utilities. And that's what the toolkit provides, is links that our listeners can go to download these free utilities to troubleshoot problems with their home computers. Right. Unfortunately, we don't have anything because Macs just work, right, Cal? We don't have anything on the Apple side of the house.
You plug them in, they work. I mean, they're really boring.
You know, and I'm almost regretting, I hate to admit this, I tried talking my son into getting a Mac when he went to college. And I hated to do that because I would not be able to support him remotely. But then the other side of me says, well, that's a good thing, isn't it?
that they can't call you because they know you can't
I can't help it.
Yeah,
it's a character builder.
So we have some lines open for you. The number again is 800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957.
You'll notice we're not putting that number out on our social media feeds at all.
Yeah. You don't take calls, do you?
No, I was going to ask you.
And you don't want those calls.
Yeah. No, my advice for the last girl would have been just throw it away and buy a new one. That's totally how I do things.
Printers are $50 now.
Just right. Oh, but I just bought $50 worth of ink.
That's
though.
The problem is you have orphan stranded ink cartridges.
Yeah, you'll find it at some garage sale.
So I thought we had a caller come in, but apparently not. Dropped off.
So let me tell you about something that I just discovered in the past week or so that I think is really exciting, at least for me. And I think Foster also found it exciting, too, because he found out the same thing. Apple is going to be having their Worldwide Developers Conference coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Normally in June, yep.
Yep, and they are there is rumblings for people who want to cut the cord that CBS is going to sign on with Apple and put their content into Apple TV as well.
Really?
Yes, so that'll help to expand that base of content that you'll have available to you as well.
Apple developers? There's going to be three people at this conference?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, how old is the most recent Apple TV? So they have an Apple. There's two generations. Am I wrong about that?
There's three generations of Apple TV out right now.
Okay.
So there's the third generation one is out currently.
That's called the iWatch, right?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just the actual TV set-top box.
Okay.
And so at the developers conference, usually every time they're going to announce something, the logo for the developers conference will generally give you a hint of what's going to happen. And surprisingly, it's shaped very much like the Apple set-top box.
Okay.
So there's a lot of talk. And plus, there was some talk by the CEO of CBS that Apple and CBS were in conversations, and the conversations were going really well. So there's a good chance that that type of content might start showing up. So if you're trying to cut that cord, and many people who use cable TV on average have 200 channels, and they only look at 14 to 17 of them. So we'll come back and talk some more about that, and we'll take more of your calls at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR, and we'll continue here on the Internet Advisor.
Too much fun during the commercials. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, co-host Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, Gary Baker, and the guys from the IT and the D. And it's just it's like a barrel full of monkeys. And you can join us with your tech questions at 800-859-0957.
Hey, and we want to thank David Schwartz and Michael Stetz, behind the glass, our new engineer. And Michael is answering your phone calls when you call in. We're dealing with a few technology issues, and they're certainly having to deal with us, which is, I have no
so
idea how they're able to do that.
We have the Schwartz.
We do. The Schwartz is with us.
The Schwartz is with us. David Schwartz, our new engineer. So that's great. Hey, we have AZ from Detroit. Welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you for calling in. What kind of problem can we help you with?
Well, every time when I log in, it keeps coming on a screen that the pages are unresponsive, and I can either wait or I can kill them. And I have a laptop computer. I use Windows 7, and I use Google. My browser is Google Chrome.
Okay, and so you're saying that every time you launch Google Chrome, the pages that come up, could you describe what's happening again?
It comes on a screen. And it got a little square, and it said my pages are unresponsive. I can wait for to become responsive, or I can kill them.
Yep. Okay. Okay.
So a little dialogue box.
It's like I have to reload it. It reloads us.
I think it's like the script is taking too long to load, is what it's saying.
Yeah. And I agree. And that's one of the trends that seems to be happening a lot when when you launch Google, you can have it launch multiple tabs simultaneously. And, of course, one of the first things that loads when you access any website is they want to get the advertisements out to you as soon as possible. I think that's where you're heading, right? The scripts.
I think it's the JavaScript, yeah.
Yeah. So how would you address this? I mean, the first thing I would do is ask the user to go into their Google settings and verify what the homepage is that he's viewing and possibly change it to something else because maybe that's not his favorite page.
Just something simple like either google.com as a homepage, or I mean it could also be make sure you're only launching one tab on startup. Either kill off the internet history from within settings within Chrome, or get a package like CCleaner or something like that that'll blow away all your cache and all that. I mean, it could just be the system's bogging down because you've got so much resident there already.
You know, that's a good point as well.
Let me ask a question. Does this happen only when you first start up, or does it happen periodically?
It happens all the time.
Okay, yeah. So all the time. So,
and now when you do kill it and start it again, does it then start up that time, or do you still have a problem?
So, I mean, are you ever able to...
Sometimes it'll work and sometimes it won't. I had to start it all over again.
So how do you connect to the internet? Are you connected via Comcast or...
It's AT&T.
Could this be a problem with connectivity?
It's possible, but it's more than likely something is being delayed. Either his browser's damaged or, like they said, had corrupt cache files, or the server he's running on, the Java code that's trying to push to his computer, and his computer isn't interpreting it properly.
Could it be possible that the version of Java he has on his machine is too old?
For JavaScript, probably not. But probably I'd like to think, what kind of add-ons are running in his Chrome, right?
And that's exactly where I was going. So in Google Chrome, if you top right-hand side, you have the two or the three horizontal lines, and you select those, and you can go into the Google Settings. Once you go into Google Settings, you can not only change your home page, what pages are opened every time you go in there, but you can clean out your cache and delete your cache files, but then you can also modify your add-ons. Is that correct?
You can.
Yeah, okay. You can add you can modify or disable extensions from right in there as well, too.
That was the term I was looking for, extensions. Yep. So you can go into the settings and extensions, and you could start disabling various toolbars and add-ons that are in Google Chrome. Because a lot of times when you visit websites, you'll have extensions and add-ons that are put there, and you don't want them there. Like, where did this come from? I don't need coupon masters, or whatever, or, how to make pancake toolbar. I don't need that.
Well, and that's all available in the top right. There should be it's a little square that's got three bars on it. You click that, and that's what gets you into the preferences, internet history, your extensions, all that fun stuff.
Great. Now, is there a way within Google Chrome to do a reset and just reset all that, like there is with Internet Explorer?
I think there is in the preferences, and I think another way to test that is you can go into incognito mode in Chrome, which basically will stop any of the plugins from loading. It'll basically not save to cookies or cache. That'd be a really good test as well.
Okay, now how do you open up? You can also, and you access that by going to the three horizontal lines in the top right-hand side.
I think it's actually in the Chrome menu. And file well, new
either
incognito.
Way. Either way, you can say open a new
window or open a new incognito window. And just tell it to open a new incognito window and see if things run a lot faster.
What is incognito? What does that mean?
That basically means that it runs in sort of a
safe mode,
kind of like a safe mode, where it's not going to load a lot of the extensions, it's not going to save any cookies to cache, it's not going to do any of that stuff. And so if that works and it runs a lot faster for you, then odds are good that in your normal Chrome session, in your normal Chrome browser, you've got issues with extensions or your cache or something like that you want to look at.
So basically the scenario is go into Google Chrome on those three horizontal lines in the top right-hand corner, and you can, like I said, you can go in there, check your settings, check your extensions, and then you can also have the ability to launch an incognito mode window, mm-hmm. and just type into the address bar a website and see if it works.
AC, if you'll try that and call us back if that doesn't work.
Or go to the InternetAdvisor.net website and you can send us an email and then we can correspond that way as well.
Or Nuri's cell phone number is 2... No.
Well, thank you. Hopefully we've solved that problem not only for AC but for others. Let's go to Dennis from Sterling Heights. Dennis, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I've got a... Vista machine. It's older, and I've got a Brother printer that I purchased, and it was working fine, and then one day it said that I had a problem. I contacted Brother Tech Support. They said my spooler was bad, and they said that was something with the computer, not with their tech support or the printer. You guys know anything about a spooler?
Well, if it's on a Singer sewing machine, I know what it is. But that is also something that Microsoft uses. A spooler is a print queue, if you will, that your print job is submitted software-wise from whatever application you're using. If it's Microsoft Word, if it's Internet Explorer, it submits it to the spooler, and the spooler sort of like streams it out like a thread to the printer, serially to the printer. So if your spooler's damaged, then you're not going to be able to print. Yeah. And usually you could fix the spoolers by deleting all of your
I know there's another way, but it's been years since I've done it. Neri, maybe you can.
Oh, it's been a long time since I've
done it, too. So what I usually do to fix the spooler is I go into Windows Devices and Printers, delete all my printer references, and then when you add your first printer, you reboot, of course, after you delete all your printers. When you reinstall the printer, and in this case a brother, it'll recreate
your spooler.
Yeah, it'll recreate your spoolers because you have no default printers at that point.
Right.
See, I think that's one of those things that tech support is always like, oh yeah, it's your spooler, or oh, it's your TCP/IP stack, or I feel like that's one of those things they kind of, when they're out of ideas, that's what they tell you.
Yeah, it's your left-handed smoke shifter.
Yeah. Or your rotator splint.
Right.
You change your air filter by any chance.
Right. And sometimes you can get a spooler errors if you have disk errors, as an example. Mm-hmm. So you might want to run on your computer, check your disk drive for errors. And in Vista, you do that by going into your My Computer, right mouse clicking on your C drive, and going into Properties. And then there's a Tools tab at the top. And when you select the tools, you have the ability to check your disk drive for errors now. And then after you do that, then you might want to try deleting the printers and then re-adding them again. Cal, do you have something to add to
this? I was roaming around on the Microsoft website, and if you go to windows.microsoft.com...
Oh, don't tell me there's a fix-it for it.
Yeah, and do a search for spooler fix. Ah. There's a Mr. Fix-It that you can go there, click on it, and it'll do it for you.
You guys are so lucky that you live in the generation...
Did you find that on Google?
No, I just went to windows.microsoft.com.
Perfect.
Right. And our listeners are really lucky because...
Next to Google.
You know, Nuri and I were talking about, oh my gosh, what's that fix for how to fix a spooler? We were thinking about the old Microsoft instructions where they tell you to go into the registry, delete this file, and then turn your seat around three times, reboot your computer. where now Microsoft has Microsoft Fix-It. And basically, it's a canned script that performs all these tasks for you, our listeners.
Okay. Click on a link and it downloads the software fix and it fixes the machine automatically.
Right, so look for our Mr. Fix-It for Windows Vista for a spooler fix.
Sounds great. Thanks,
Dennis,
take my call.
Hey, but Dennis, thank you. And Bert, hang on. We'll get you in the next segment. Cal?
Yeah, and we'll be back in the next segment with more questions from you, the listening audience here at WJR. And you can call us at 1-800-859-0957 for more questions on the Internet Advisor.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm one of your hosts, Ed Rudell from the Internet Advisor, Cal Carson, and Gary Baker. And I just realized we have so much tech people here. If you ask any one of us a single question, you'll get five different answers.
And all of them will probably be right.
Yeah. Or wrong.
Depending on what you're trying to fix.
It's the Obi-Wan theory. It's all right from a certain point of view.
Yes, of course. Well, we're going to test that theory now because we're going to Bert in Vermilion, Ohio. Bert, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a PC running Windows 7, and every once in a while I get the dreaded blue screen, but before I can read the error code, the thing goes blank, and is there any way to freeze the screen so I can at least read the error code, which is a whole bunch of zeros and something on the end?
Yeah, that's good that you know that you should read that, so that's good.
You know, I remember the old days where I used to have to wait for it to blue screen, and I'd force it to blue screen until the pattern burned itself on the back of my retinas so I could read it. You know what I'm saying? But I'm older now, and it doesn't happen. My retinas don't retain that, so I use my smartphone to actually record a movie right before the blue screen, and then I can scroll through it. That's one method. But what is causing the blue screen? Typically, you guys, what causes a blue screen?
Memory.
Windows.
Well, what's going on
Windows.
Just before?
Yeah, just Microsoft Windows.
What's going on before the blue screen of death comes up?
Usually, I really can't put my finger on it because I'm working along in maybe Photoshop or WordPerfect or something like that. And then all of a sudden it'll come up, and what I'm able to read is that says that Windows is trying to find out what to save before it shuts down to protect the computer, and then it shuts down, and then I reboot it, hard reboot it, you know, with a button.
Yeah. Right.
And usually it's okay. Once in a while, it'll go into repair mode, but it's never a permanent fix.
How old is this computer?
I'd say about 2-3 years old.
Okay.
Have you done anything to it recently? Added memory, changed the printer, or anything like that?
No. This is, in fact, I don't even have any printers hooked up to it, and pretty much, it just comes very intermittently. Someone said once that maybe Microsoft has some kind of a patch or some kind of thing that I could download or they could repair.
Well, but you have to know what the error message is to begin with. Now, Microsoft does not really provide a way for you to diagnose it. I mean, I wish Microsoft, every time it crashed, it came up and gave you the answer. But it does provide you the ability to view your error log. But that is difficult to even interpret. I go in there and I see all these red exclamation points and I'm intimidated, right?
So I've used your suggestion, which is, you know, have my smartphone ready as soon as it looks like it's going into blue screen or as soon as I want to capture something.
Put it in a movie mode and capture it.
And let it go and capture something. That way I can read it afterwards. Other than that, what can we do?
Well, the interesting thing about the way Windows works is that when that error happens, it generates a file too.
Right.
It basically takes all the contents of the memory along with the error message you get in your blue screen, basically the text you're looking for, and it dumps it out at C:Windows. There's a folder called mini dump.
Yep.
And it basically will tag it with the time and the date of the crash. So you basically can open that up in something like Notepad or Notepad++ and basically see what is contained in that error.
The only issue with that, though, is that it's going to contain an awful lot of hex because, I mean, especially if you've got Photoshop or something like that open and it's trying to save it into a text file, it's going to have a whole lot of binary characters in it. So, yeah, I mean, as long as you go down, just know that you're going to bypass a whole lot of junk at the beginning of the file and head towards the end where you can see that error message. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the other thing is that Microsoft makes a memory dump crash utility, but you have to download a whole bunch of other Microsoft tools to be able to get the crash analyzer.
For Bert, one more time, he opens up Notepad. He types in C:\Windows\mini-dump
is the name of the folder. And there's going to be probably a lot of files in there, especially if this is happening on a regular basis. So, you know, just sort them by date and time and figure out which one is the newest, and you'll be able to open that one up.
But and then
it's almost like we're back to MS-DOS, then, huh?
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. Yeah. You could use
If I upgraded to Windows 8.1, would that help any, or would that make no difference?
That's assuming that your hardware has integrity and it can handle it.
Right. Plus, Windows 8 is really different. 8.1, it's a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, you need touchscreen, right, to really make that work well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then 10's coming out in July, right?
Yeah, so save it for 10.
And it's also going to be free.
And it's going to be free. So the Windows 10 may buy you something. It may correct the Windows, if you're experiencing Windows problem, but you could be experiencing
a hardware problem too.
You could have a hard drive that's going bad. You could have
bad memory module,
a motherboard. It's really hard to tell. But so, it's more than likely it's software.
So once he goes into Windows\mini-dump and he finds that error, he could copy the error code and then go search on that error code and then he can find it.
Absolutely.
Right? Find out what that error code means.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Does that work, Bert?
Thank you very much.
Yep.
So try that. If that doesn't work or if you're still having problems, go to internetadvisor.net. and the Contact Us button and send us an email, especially if you can get to that error code. Send us the email. Maybe we can handle it off the air during the week.
Yep.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bert, thank you for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, that was a tough one. You guys don't take listener calls in IT and the D.
We do, it's usually just folks that are listening to us and want to banter with us and that kind of stuff.
Or friends wanting to heckle us.
My high school friend Joel, who, you know, calls in and just wants to ramble about stuff after a few beers and listens every week. We've tried to do guests via phone. Mm-hmm. For us, it just doesn't work. Like, we don't have the responsibility that you guys do when it comes to guests. So, I mean, it's just like we wind up tending to talk over people, and it's not as clean and smooth for us. That's why we focus on our in-studio guests.
So you guys are more entertainment about IT as opposed to being problem solvers.
Oh, absolutely. The best compliment we've received is that, you know, you guys aren't very informative, but wow, are you entertaining.
We have Eugene from Livonia on the line. So, Eugene, you have a call. You have a question for us?
Yes. Somehow my home page changed to ask. I don't know
Java.
How it happened.
Java update.
Yeah.
And Java.
Yeah, we're okay. This is
no,
weird.
So this is but this is good. Now, all we of don't us have agree. A lot of time, so let's all succinctly tell them what happened.
Well, which browser?
Firefox.
So what happens is that Java is an application that runs on your computer. It runs in your taskbar, and it's set to automatically update and check for updates. By default, once it starts installing, there's a little checkbox that basically says, you probably just clicked through it. Yes, I agree. Okay, next. And when you did, one of the boxes was basically download the Ask toolbar and then set Ask as my homepage. So what you'll have to do, so you've agreed to this, because you clicked through the Java install. This is how Java's paying for their, well, this is one of the ways Sun Microsystems is paying for the Java codes and the security updates, is to have these additional toolbars, like Ask, installed on people's computers.
So now he can go to his toolbar and then reset it as his homepage, right?
Right. He can go into within Mozilla Firefox and then set his
Internet options homepage. Tools, internet options, homepage, whatever you want your homepage to be from right there.
Right. And then once you do that, you'll be fine.
Oh, so that's been great. Thanks a lot for calling in. And then if you have any other questions, please go to our website, internetadvisor.net, and you can put in your questions at the Ask Us section out there. Guys from IT and the D, great to have you here, both Bob, Dave, and Nuri.
Appreciate
it's been
it.
A
Thank
ball.
You.
It's Thank been you. A scream. And we'll look forward to having you folks again with us next week. Remember, if you have any questions, call us next week. We'll be able to take your calls at 1-800-859-0957. Gary, great to have you again.
Always a pleasure.
And also, Ed, it's good to be here as well.
Thank you.
And we'll see Foster back here next week as well. This is Cal saying goodbye from Internet Advisor.